It's amazing how much the concept of property ownership within a marriage has changed, right? Like, who owns what when it comes to married couples? It wasn't always as clear-cut as it might seem today.
Oh, absolutely. And it's fascinating how sometimes these huge shifts in legal thinking come from seemingly ordinary cases.
Yeah. And in Tennessee, there was this case, a road widening project, that ended up completely changing the game when it comes to spousal property rights.
Right.
It really highlights how property law can be so much more than just about land and deeds. It's tied up with ideas of fairness and equality within a marriage.
It is. We're going to take a deep dive into a legal decision that really shook things up and had a ripple effect way beyond that one road in Tennessee. So get ready for a fascinating story that sheds light on how the law adapts to changing societal norms.
Okay, so for everyone listening who's interested in the finer points of property law, especially how it intersects with marriage and individual rights, this is one you'll want to pay attention to. So, are you ready to jump into this Tennessee road widening case?
I am. It's a great example of how a local dispute can end up having national implications.
Exactly. All right, let's set the scene. It's 1974, and we're in Trousdale County, Tennessee. Our main players are Vestal and Ruby Robinson, a married couple who owns some property.
And this property is held as tenants by the entirety, a very specific legal way for married couples to own property together.
Which we'll explain in more detail later because it's really crucial to understanding why this case became such a big deal. But first, let's talk about why Trousdale County was suddenly so interested in the Robinsons' land.
Well, they needed some of it for a road widening project. Makes sense, right? Infrastructure, progress, all that. But the way they went about getting that land is where things get a little sticky.
A little. Okay, so tell me, how did this simple road project turn into a major legal battle?
So Vestal, the husband, he decides to do what he thinks is best and signs a deed transferring the property to the county. All on his own, he didn't even ask Ruby, his wife, for her consent.
Whoa, hold on. Even I know that sounds like a recipe for trouble. I
Yeah.
mean, they earned this property together, right?
Exactly. And that's what makes Vestal's move so significant and ultimately a huge legal misstep.
I bet Ruby was not too happy about that.
Understatement, she was not happy at all. And understandably so. They sued Trousdale County. Their argument, their property had been basically taken without following the proper legal procedures.
Right, because in their eyes, it wasn't just Vestal's property to give away.
Exactly. So the case goes to court. Now, the lower courts had a kind of confusing response, right? They didn't fully side with either the Robinsons or the county. It's almost like they were trying to find a middle ground, but it ended up being kind of messy.
Oh, I love messy legal situations. Tell me more about how the lower courts tried to navigate this.
Well, they said that Vestal couldn't really claim damages because he was the one who tried to give the property away. Legally speaking, they used the principle of estoppel against him. Basically, he couldn't go back and say he was harmed because he tried to transfer the property improperly in the first place. But on the other hand, they did recognize that Ruby, the wife, definitely had an interest in the land and she had been wronged.
Okay, so what did they do about Ruby's situation?
They awarded her $530 in damages. Sounds reasonable, right? But the appellate court, they added this really weird condition. They said that this $530 should be put into a special escrow account. And get this. If Vestal died before Ruby, she would get the money. But if Ruby died first, the money would go back to the county.
Wait, what? That's kind of bizarre, isn't it? Her compensation was basically riding on a coin toss. Like her getting her rightful damages depended on who died first. Talk about adding insult to injury.
Exactly. It made no sense, especially considering she was an equal owner of the property.
So it seems pretty clear why they decided to appeal to the Tennessee Supreme Court. And I'm guessing the focus shifted specifically to how Ruby was being compensated, right?
Spot on. The lower courts had this kind of mixed bag of rulings, but the big issue that the Supreme Court really tackled was how Ruby's ownership and right to compensation were being treated. To really get why the Supreme Court was so important in this case, we need to explain how Vestal and Ruby owned this property in the first place.
Yeah, let's dive into this tenancy by the entirety thing because I have a feeling that's the key to everything.
It really is. Okay, so tenancy by the entirety, it's this special type of joint ownership that exists only for married couples. It's got some unique characteristics that set it apart from other ways of owning property together.
Like what?
The biggest one is the right of survivorship. This means if one spouse passes away, boom, the other spouse automatically becomes the sole owner of the entire property. No ifs, ands, or buts. It just happens.
Makes sense. It simplifies things in a difficult time.
Right. And the other crucial thing is, neither spouse can transfer their interest in the property without the other's consent. It's like this legally unbreakable bond. They own the property as one single unit, not as separate halves.
So trying to do anything with that property, selling it, giving it away, anything, requires both spouses to be on board.
100%. And that's why what Vestal did was such a big no-no. He acted like he had the sole authority to transfer the property, but under a tenancy by the entirety, that's just not how it works.
Okay, so tenancy by the entirety, got it. Now, to understand just how groundbreaking this whole case was, you mentioned earlier we need to talk about this historical legal concept called coverture. It sounds pretty archaic.
Archaic is putting it mildly. You see, coverture was this old common law doctrine, basically, a leftover from a time when the law didn't view women as having the same legal standing as men. It was the idea that when a woman got married, her legal identity kind of got swallowed up by her husband's.
So, like, she ceased to exist as an independent person in the eyes of the law?
In many ways, yeah. They became this single legal entity, but it was the husband who called the shots. And this affected everything, but especially property rights. Even if a woman owned property before getting married or came into some during the marriage, her husband had a crazy amount of control over it.
So even though they were supposed to be equal partners in the marriage,
yeah,
legally speaking, the wife's rights were pretty much non-existent.
Sadly, yeah, that's the gist of it. And you can see how this clashes with the whole idea of equal rights between spouses. But the good news is, Tennessee had already taken steps to abolish this outdated concept back in 1913 with the Married Women's Emancipation Act. The goal was to give married women way more legal and economic independence.
So by the time we get to the Robinsons case in 1974, coverture should have been ancient history in Tennessee.
That's exactly what the Tennessee Supreme Court was trying to make clear. They were like, come on, folks, we're in the 20th century now, time to catch up.
So let's talk about what the Supreme Court actually decided, because it was a huge moment. Justice Henry, who wrote the majority opinion, was very straightforward in his language. No beating around the bush.
So what did the Supreme Court think about Vestal's attempt to just transfer the property without Ruby say-so?
They were having none of it. Yep. The Supreme Court was crystal clear that deed that Vestal signed void, at least when it came to Ruby's share of the property. They basically laid down the law and said that because they owned the property as tenants by the entirety, both Vestal and Dee Ruby had to agree to any kind of transfer. No solo acts allowed.
Right. It's like the court was sending a message that married women weren't just passive bystanders when it came to property owned jointly with their husbands.
Exactly. And the way they talked about coverture is really powerful. They didn't hold back. They called it oppressive and degrading.
Wow. Strong words from the court. They were serious. They basically said this whole concept of coverture had no place in modern law. It was incompatible with everything they stood for. They kept hammering home the point that the 1913 Act, the one that emancipated married women, had established equal property rights for spouses. Mutual consent, they said, was a non-negotiable requirement when it came to property held as tenancy by the entirety.
It sounds like they were drawing a very clear line in the sand. No more of this outdated unequal treatment.
You got it. And they didn't stop there. Remember that whole escrow arrangement the lower courts came up with? The Supreme Court wasn't having any of that either. They were very unhappy with how Ruby's right to compensation was being handled. It was like the lower courts were trying to diminish her rights as a property owner.
Yeah, that whole thing about her only getting the money if she outlived her husband. Talk about adding insult to injury.
It was ridiculous. The Supreme Court shut that down real quick. They said Ruby's right to compensation was immediate and it wasn't up for debate. It wasn't tied to anything, especially not something as arbitrary as who lived longer. She owned half of that property. And that meant she deserved to be compensated fairly for her share when it was taken, period.
They were basically saying her ownership wasn't conditional, it was real and deserved to be respected.
Exactly. The key takeaway here is that the court saw Ruby as an equal owner, not someone whose rights were somehow dependent on her husband. Now, remember, I mentioned there is also a concurring opinion from Justice Henry. It wasn't just him repeating what he'd already said in the majority opinion.
Yeah, there must have been more to it than that.
Oh, there was. Justice Henry's concurring opinion actually added a whole other level of significance to the case. He didn't just say coverture was outdated and bad legal practice. He went further and argued that it was flat out unconstitutional.
Whoa. He brought the Constitution into it. Okay, I'm all ears. Explain how coverture violated the Constitution.
Yeah, Justice Henry argued that coverture violated the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. And his reasoning was pretty straightforward. It treated married women as somehow lesser than their husbands in property matters. It denied them equal protection under the law based solely on their sex. It was straight up discrimination.
So not only was coverture bad law, it was actually against the Constitution. That's a powerful statement.
It is, and it shows how seriously the court was taking the issue of gender equality and property rights. This wasn't just some academic debate for them. It was about fundamental fairness. So after all that legal wrangling, what did the Supreme Court ultimately do?
Give me the juicy details. What was the final outcome?
They reversed the lower court's decision about that whole conditional escrow thing. Basically, they said, nope, that's not how it works. Berube Robinson was entitled to her compensation right then and there, no strings attached. It wasn't up for debate or dependent on who died first.
Zero. Justice served.
Right. It's about time. And this ruling had some pretty big consequences beyond just Ruby getting her money, too. It actually changed the way creditors, people, or companies who are owed money could go after marital property.
Oh, okay. How so? Tell me more about how this case affected creditors' rights.
Well, the court said that if a creditor was trying to get money from one spouse in a tenancy by the entirety, they could only go after that spouse's right of survivorship. They couldn't touch the jointly held property itself.
So they couldn't try to seize the entire property to satisfy a debt that only one spouse owed.
Nope. Not anymore. That was a huge change, and it really emphasized the unique protections afforded by tenancy by the entirety. It recognized that both spouses had equal stakes in the property, and that one spouse's debt shouldn't jeopardize the other's ownership.
That's like the court was saying, hold on, creditors, this is a partnership, and you can't just come in here and disrupt that because one spouse has financial issues.
Exactly. It protected the non-debtor spouse's interest in the property.
This is all pretty complex, but let's try to break down the main takeaways from Robinson v. Trousdale County. It seems like the first big one is that this case basically drove the final nail into the coffin of coverture in Tennessee, right?
Yes. It was like the court was saying, we're done with this antiquated concept. It has no place in our legal system.
Good riddance. What else?
Well, the second big thing is that it definitively established that in a tenancy by the entirety, both spouses have absolute equal control over the property. Both of them need to be in agreement for anything to happen with that property. No more of this husband gets to decide nonsense.
It sounds like a landmark case for gender equality and property rights.
Oh, absolutely. Robinson v. Trousdale County is considered a landmark case across the U.S. It sent a clear message that the days of treating women as second-class citizens in property matters were over.
There's this really powerful quote from the case that really captures the court's attitude, and it always gives me chills when I read it. It says, "We do not believe that the common law disability of coverture has any sanction in our jurisprudence or any relevance in our society. At best, it is outmoded. At worst, oppressive and degrading."
It's a powerful statement, isn't it? It shows just how much the court was rejecting this idea that women's legal rights were somehow tied to their husbands.
It's amazing to think that even in the 1970s, courts were still having to address this kind of blatant inequality.
It is. But that's why cases like Robinson are so important. They force the legal system to confront its biases and adapt to changing societal values.
So at the end of the day, Robinson v. Trousdale County wasn't just about a simple road widening project. It was about something much bigger. It was about reshaping the landscape of property law in Tennessee to ensure that married couples were treated fairly and equally when it came to owning and controlling their property. It really was a turning point.
It was. And it makes you think, right, how might the principles established in this case continue to shape how we view property rights as family structures evolve? We're seeing so many different types of families now, and property law needs to keep up with these changes.
That's such a great point. Like, how do we apply these concepts of fairness and equality to situations like same-sex couples, unmarried partners who own property together, blended families, all those modern family structures that maybe weren't even considered back in 1974?
Right. It's all about making sure that everyone, regardless of their relationship status or gender, has their property rights protected and respected. Robinson v. Trousdale County really set the stage for that ongoing conversation.
It did. It's like this one case sparked by a simple road widening project ended up having a ripple effect that we're still feeling today. It's a powerful reminder of how the law can be a tool for social change, even in the most unexpected ways.
It is, and I think it leaves us with a really inspiring thought. The law has the potential to correct its past wrongs and become a force for progress. It's not always perfect, but it can adapt and evolve to create a more just and equitable society for everyone.
It definitely gives you hope for the future of law, doesn't it?
It does. And it reminds us that we all have a role to play in holding the legal system accountable and pushing it to be better.
Absolutely. And with that thought, we're going to wrap up this deep dive into Robinson v. Trousdale County. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp, folks. And if you're ever driving through Trousdale County, Tennessee, take a moment to think about the legal battle that changed the landscape of property law forever.
You never know what seemingly ordinary places might hold extraordinary legal stories, right?
You get that right.
It's the law that keeps things interesting.
You bet.